treaty organization that has existed since the end of World War II in keeping the peace. He's attacked all, virtually all, of our greatest allies, Canada, Germany, the UK, France, Italy. I'm not sure who he hasn't attacked that's our friends while loving our enemies. Certainly, he said very nice things about Kim Jong-un, even though Kim Jong-un has said he's not going to do anything anytime soon to stop his nuclear weapons. Thank you, Donald Trump, the dictator of North Korea says, for giving him the legitimacy that he's craved now, or that North Korea has craved for 50 years, but he's not going to give anything for it. And Putin? Well, Putin gets a sloppy wet kiss from our president, Donald Trump. Now, the fact that Donald Trump is pro-Russia shouldn't surprise anyone. We've talked at length on the show about all the ties that Trump and his associates have to the Russians. Some 82 members of his family or his administration have had secret contacts with the Russians. None of them had been reported, by the way. In fact, there were some 15 or 20 blanket denials from the Trump administration. 82 have been discovered so far. We don't know how many Robert Mueller will discover. But we also know things about Jared Kushner, for example, his financial ties to Russia, Trump's financial ties to Russia, and that elusive tape of prostitutes urinating that was taken in the Moscow Ritz-Carlton that may just put Donald Trump in an extremely compromising position. But whether because he's being blackmailed or because he's being bought, one can safely say that Donald Trump is the most pro-Russian, pro-dictator president, well, in modern U.S. history. And the question is, how do we get here? How do we get to a point where more Republicans favor Kim Jong-un than Nancy Pelosi? How do we get to a point where 40% of Republicans advocate the United States withdrawing from NATO, withdrawing from the treaty alliance with us and Germany and the UK that has kept the world peace for the last 70 years? How do we get here? And do you hear what I hear? Yep, that's Ronald Reagan rolling around in his grave. Republicans did not used to be pro-dictatorship, pro-communism, pro-gulags, pro-internment camps. I realize now they support separating children from their parents and really abusing them in horrible ways. Even today, the Donald Trump administration has refused to obey a solid court order to reunite families. We'll find out what the court does to punish the administration. I hope it's severe. But today I want to really look at the long question. What made the Republican Party, the party of the person I consider the greatest president in the United States history, Abraham Lincoln, become the party of Vladimir Putin? How is it that ordinary Americans now trust Russia more than Canada and consider Canada a national security threat while welcoming the totalitarian dictators of the former and hoping to be reconstituted Soviet Union? How did we get here? The Republican Party was born in the 1850s. It was born out of a response to slavery. The old Whig Party had collapsed due to northern and southern interests. The Democratic Party of Andrew Jackson, which was a successor to the Democratic Republican Party of Thomas Jefferson, was all about the people. It was all about individual people. Now, to be clear, these were individual white males, but it included poor people, not just rich people. Originally, there were property requirements to vote. Jefferson very much opposed the moneyed classes of Hamilton and Adams. And then Andrew Jackson, for all his faults and the Trail of Tears and all his racism, did, at least for the poor white man, provide universal suffrage. For poor white men, for all white men, you didn't have to own property anymore. You could vote. And so the Democrats were the party of the little guys. The Whigs, kind of as they sounded, were the party of the big moneyed interests. But the Whig Party fell apart over slavery. And the Republican Party came in there as, well, an anti-slavery party, specifically a party to against expanding slavery into the territories. And, well, Abraham Lincoln, I think we all know, fought a very powerful civil war and kept this country together and freed the slaves. And for a time period thereafter, the Republicans, then called the Radical Republicans, actually wanted to remake the United States, to have equality. The 14th Amendment, 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments of the United States talked about equal protection under the law for even the newly freed slaves, who, according to the 15th Amendment, would be allowed to vote. Well, unfortunately, the Republicans started backing away from that promise. The Democratic Party, which was the party of the South, the party of the slaveholders, the party of racism, was allowed to take power again, while Republicans turned to other interests. By the turn of the century, the Republican Party became the party of business. This was around the time of William McKinley. They became the party of big business, of big corporations. But then Teddy Roosevelt, again a Republican, following McKinley, still had some of that progressive instincts. In fact, he broke up big corporations. He busted trusts. He believed in the environment. He wasn't much like the Republicans that we think about today. Going into the 1930s, though, in the 1920s, the Republican Party became quite corrupt. And under Harding, there were a number of scandals. And again, it was still remained the party of the rich. And by the time of the Great Depression, the poor people, black and white, turned to Franklin Roosevelt, Teddy's distant cousin, to give us the New Deal. But the Republican Party continued to oppose the Democratic Party. And as Franklin Roosevelt went to Harry S. Truman, the biggest thing the Republicans opposed was communism. That's right, in the 1950s, the Republicans accused everyone to the left of them of being pinkos, of being communists. Indeed, in the Joe McCarthy era, we found Republicans actually defending, well, what would later be called McCarthyism, but calling up people before the House Committee on Un-American Activities and saying, "Have you ever been a communist?" That was probably the worst insult you could imagine. Worst even than Nazis, to be a communist. And why were Republicans anti-communists? Well, there frankly are two reasons to be anti-communist, and one makes a lot of sense and the other not so much. What was communism? Communism, at least the kind practiced by the Soviet Union in World War II, and well, really the teens, 20s and 30s, was to some on the left, Marxism was about equality, was about socialism, was about giving the little guy an equal shot, was even against racial discrimination, which is why you found a lot of African Americans, a lot of Jews, in fact, supported communism in the early 1920s, 1930s, because they thought it was all about socialism. Unfortunately, the Soviet brand of communism was not so much about socialism as it was about dictatorship, totalitarianism. Stalin had gulags, these mass prisons, and killed almost as many as Adolf Hitler, murdered his political opponents. And so people really, by the 1950s, Democrats and Republicans were united against communism for different reasons, right? The Democrats and some Republicans opposed Soviet communism because, well, it was against democracy. It was a dictatorship. It opposed the freedom of the United States. And some Republicans opposed it for that reason, and others, well, opposed it because they thought it was socialism, when really, there really wasn't much socialism in Soviet communism, as it turned it out. But Democrats, like Harry S. Truman and John F. Kennedy, fought communism along with Republicans like Dwight D. Eisenhower. And it all culminated in Lyndon Johnson's fighting communism so hard that we went to a really, what's the nicest thing I can say about it? Let's just say a counterproductive war in Vietnam. But the war in Vietnam was ostensibly not about protecting the South Vietnamese dictatorship, though it kind of became that. It really was about opposing the spread of communism. We fought a war in Korea under Dwight D. Eisenhower to save South Korea from communism. Indeed, South Korea today is a free and independent and very wealthy democratic state, still under the threat of communist North Korea. But by the 1960s, everyone opposed communism, but we might have disagreed on how to fight it. Should we fight it in Vietnam, for example? That takes us through the 60s and the 70s. But by the time the Vietnam War was over, Ronald Reagan came into power. And if anything, this man, Ronald Reagan, was very, very much against the Soviet Union, very much against communism, very much against totalitarian dictatorship. He said, Mikhail Gorbachev, tear down this wall. Tear down the Berlin Wall that separated East from West Berlin, that we had preserved East Berlin under Harry S. Truman. We had preserved that freedom in West Berlin, even though it was surrounded by Soviet troops, Soviet territory. So that's, I guess, the good side of Ronald Reagan. The bad side of Ronald Reagan is that he largely copied the Southern strategy of Richard M. Nixon. So one of the things that Lyndon Johnson did that really changed the parties forever, and Johnson knew it when he did it, was it was under Lyndon Johnson that we passed those two great acts that largely freed African Americans from the continuing legacy of slavery. Racism isn't over yet, but the slavery legacy meant that under Jim Crow laws, under Ku Klux Klan, under lynchings, intimidation by the South, blacks largely couldn't vote by the 1960s. And in 64 and 65, Congress passed the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act. And those acts allowed African Americans to, at least on paper, under the law, have equality. Now, I recognize that there's still tremendous prejudice, of course. We call it racism. But legally, since the 60s, blacks had equal rights to whites. Lyndon Johnson, when he signed those laws, said that he'd signed away the South for a generation. And the only thing incorrect about that statement is that it was too short-sighted. Indeed, Lyndon Johnson may have signed away the South for two generations, particularly as the Republicans have gerrymandered their way into power. But basically, the party of racism switched in the 1960s from the Democrats to the Republicans. And Richard Nixon proudly embraced that strategy. In fact, if you look at the election of 1968, people forget there was a third party. There was Hubert Humphrey, the Democrat, if Robert Kennedy hadn't been shot by Palestinian terrorist Sirhan Sirhan, no doubt he would have won the election, and well, our whole country would have been different. But Hubert Humphrey was not as good as Robert Kennedy, though he was a liberal. Richard Nixon ran again, and the third party candidate was George Wallace. George Wallace, former Alabama governor, who proudly said segregation now, segregation forever, was the racist party, the actively racist party. And he got, I forget the exact count, but something like 14% of the vote, a substantial number of votes, far higher than third party candidates really had gotten since, well, Teddy Roosevelt in 1912. And so Richard Nixon barely won that election. And so he said, I'm going to reach out to that third party, to the former Southern Dixiecrats, the former racist Democrats of the South, and I'm going to bring them into the Republican Party. And particularly after Lyndon Johnson had signed the Civil Rights Act, a lot of Southern Democrats were ready to switch to the Republican Party. They wanted to be in the party of racism. And I'll give you a little bit more history when we come back. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Right back after this.
He's a Fulbright scholar and he speaks French, but he couldn't tell you who won the Super Bowl. It's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Giving a little bit of history of the Republican Party here, how the party of Lincoln became the party of Putin. Just talked about Ronald Reagan, who was very much anti-communist, either because the Soviet Union was a dictatorship or because it was presumed to be socialist, though it really wasn't very socialist. But Ronald Reagan was very much against the Soviet Union. He even called the Russian Empire the evil empire. Unfortunately, he also presided over a party that reclaimed the mantle of racism, largely left aside by the Democratic Party after the passage of the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act. After Ronald Reagan, though, going into George Bush Sr., it was still a party that was very much anti-communist. Of course, Russia was falling apart at this time. Russia in the 90s under Bill Clinton was almost a democracy. They actually had free elections for a time. They actually had free speech for a time. And Boris Yeltsin actually believed in democracy, at least far more than any other Russian leader. Of course, with the free press comes criticism. And Boris Yeltsin also had an alcohol problem, and he died, and his old Soviet KGB agent, Vladimir Putin, took the reins and slowly consolidated power. Became tougher and tougher, banned free press, started really propaganda channels all over the globe, including the propaganda channel RT, Russia Today, which you can still find with complete false Soviet-style propaganda. But Republicans remained anti-Russia well through the presidency of Barack Obama. In fact, it's astonishing how quickly they have switched sides on Russia. In fact, there was a negative... Republicans and all Americans had negative views of Vladimir Putin well through 2016. Today, Putin is viewed positively by a large number of Republicans. 40% of Republicans would have a withdrawal from the Western Alliance. Pretty amazing stuff. When we come back, I'm going to take your calls, 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. And focus on what it is about the Republican mindset that makes them so want to take on and accept totalitarianism, both in the United States and in Russia. What is it about what the Republicans did under Newt Gingrich that caused them to really reject these ideas of democracy and constitutionalism and just go for ultimate power? And how does that tie into their new love for the Russian dictator? All these and your calls, if you'll just stay tuned, right after this.
Got a conservative who casually misquotes the Bible and the Constitution? Send him to school with Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin, talking about the transition of the party of Lincoln, the Republican Party, and how it became the party of Putin. Now, obviously, this has a lot to do with Donald Trump, but a lot of this was happening even before Donald Trump. Not so much the Putin part, but the retreat from established norms. So back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, at the time of Walter Cronkite, CBS News anchor, there was generally accepted to be one set of facts. Facts were just facts. And the government might be lying about it, as it was in Vietnam, but when Uncle Walter said it was so, it was so. People trusted CBS News. People trusted Walter Cronkite. No one thought that the news itself was false. But the Republican Party, remember, back in the 70s and 80s, they hadn't controlled the House of Representatives since the 50s. They'd been in the wilderness for some 40-odd years, and they were determined to get it back in the 1990s. So they started newly aggressive techniques that they really hadn't tried before. Newt Gingrich largely pioneered these, and really the beginning of fake news is with Newt Gingrich, when he would give these fulsome, angry speeches in the House of Representatives to no one. I mean, the place would be empty, but Newt knew that the cameras were only focused on the speaker's dais. So he would talk like he was talking to hundreds or thousands, when really he was talking to three or four. Apparently, the appearance became more important than reality. That's the heart of what the Republican Party is today, a party where appearance is more important than reality. Republicans behind the scenes know that their policies harm their own constituents, know that their policies harm poor people and help super rich people who fund their campaigns. But they won't say that in public. They'll say it only in private. And really, the violation of established norms culminated in the impeachment of Bill Clinton. Now, Bill Clinton was supposedly being investigated because of the Whitewater land deal in Arkansas, where apparently Bill and Hillary Clinton bought some land that lost value. Not quite sure what the scandal is there. And Ken Starr spent years on it and couldn't find anything wrong with what Bill and Hillary did in Whitewater. But he did find that Bill Clinton had had an affair with Monica Lewinsky in the White House. So suddenly, the Whitewater investigation became the sordid affair investigation. Now, Bill Clinton is not the first president to have had an affair in the White House. John F. Kennedy famously had an affair with Marilyn Monroe. George Bush Sr. is reported to have had an affair. Franklin Delano Roosevelt famously had an affair behind Eleanor Roosevelt's back that she later found out about. So presidents have had affairs in the past, not justifying it, but generally that has not been considered as something to impeach a president over. Impeachment was supposed to be for high crimes and misdemeanors, things like treason and bribery, which are spelled out in the United States Constitution, not an illicit affair. I shouldn't even say illicit because it's legal, not an affair, an extramarital affair. But Republicans saw their shot and realized that a lot of Americans were upset by what Bill Clinton had done and thought we're going to impeach him because of it. They did, with their majority, impeach Bill Clinton, who was acquitted because they didn't get a two-thirds Senate vote, and the American people rejected this strategy, largely, actually, with the Democrats gaining seats in the 1998 midterms, pretty rare. But Republicans continued violating established norms. They realized they couldn't get power through democracy, through the majority of the American people. They would have to impose it on their own. One of the things they did in 2000, of course, is when Al Gore won both the popular vote and the electoral vote, because he won the majority of votes in Florida, five justices of the Supreme Court, all Republicans, stopped the vote count and said, we cannot count the votes. Justice Scalia famously said, if we count the votes, Gore will win. And that would, quote, damage the legitimacy of George Bush's claim to be president. Now, this is a Putin-like tactic, not counting votes when you know your candidate won't win. This was beyond anything anyone in America had ever done before. You could argue maybe the corruption of the 1876 election, the Hayes-Tilden election, comes close, but really never had the Supreme Court said, stop the vote count! Do not let democracy happen! Which, of course, is what they did, and famously did so based on zero precedent, no law, just on the fact that they wanted Bush to be president. That's scary stuff. That's Putin-like stuff. And really, I don't think Americans focused enough on the illegitimacy of Bush's presidency. It wasn't just that Al Gore beat him in the popular vote. Al Gore beat him in the electoral vote, too. But the Supreme Court did not allow Gore to take power. And the Democrats, as sometimes is their wont, largely wanted to put peace, to get everyone to be peaceful, and so largely accepted it. By the way, that's exactly how fascists and totalitarians like the Nazis and the Russian dictators take power. It's largely by violating established norms and then convincing the victims of that violation not to fight back lest there be turmoil. Al Gore bowed out. Bush became president, even though the American people chose Al Gore. Well, in 2000, then, the Republicans then switched to state legislatures and worked very hard during the Bush era to win state legislative seats, culminating in the election of 2010 when they won legislative seats across the country, not only kicked out the Democrats in the House of Representatives, but also won enough state legislative seats to gerrymander state after state after state to ensure Republican victories. And so you have states with Democratic majorities at that time, like Florida or Michigan or Wisconsin, states that voted for Barack Obama, like North Carolina, Pennsylvania, all of whom the Republicans drew district lines to make sure that a minority would take power. They did that in Virginia, too. And they were largely successful. It was done under the radar, and these blue states were kind of turned into red states because when a majority of the population sees they're not getting their duly elected leaders, many of them turn, because they want to win, to the minority party, the Republican Party, which was controlling America at that time. Of course, the greatest violation, I don't know if the greatest, I think Bush v. Gore is probably the greatest violation of established norms, but maybe the second greatest violation of established norms occurred in 2016 when the Senate of the United States, for the first time in American history, said, we are not going to allow the president to appoint a Supreme Court justice. It doesn't matter who Barack Obama appoints, we will not allow him to have one. Now, that had never been done either. Not in the depths of the Civil War, not in the fights between Adams and Jefferson. In fact, Adams appointed several lame duck judges to the Supreme Court in 1800. Never, never had an opposing party refuse to allow the president to appoint any Supreme Court justice. They had rejected an occasional Supreme Court justice or there, but they never refused the president to allow any. Not only did Merrick Garland not get confirmed, he didn't even get a hearing. Mitch McConnell wouldn't even meet with the president's nominee. So this is a case where, according to the Constitution, the Democrats get to appoint Supreme Court justice, but the Republicans said, screw the Constitution. We don't care about the Constitution. We care about power. We care about blunt power. Furthermore, you had, and one more thing I should point out before we get to the Trump era, you had the rise of Republican propaganda channels. Fox News was created in the 1990s by Roger Ailes to be the Republican propaganda channel. And just as Newt Gingrich would focus on appearance rather than reality, and understand, really, the Nazi propagandist Joseph Goebbels talked about the big lie. If you lie enough times and you repeat the lie enough times, people believe it, no matter how ridiculous it is. Donald Trump maybe didn't read Nazi theorist Joseph Goebbels, but certainly understood that with the whole birtherism nonsense, right? You repeat something ridiculous, something crazy enough times, and people believe it. In fact, one of the ways that Finland has avoided being under Russian influence is by teaching its students how not to believe fake news. One of the best ways, by the way, not to believe fake news is not to repeat it. Not to say this false story. Don't do what I'm about to do. Hillary Clinton having a child molestation ring in the non-existent basement of a DC pizza parlor. That's not true. Don't even repeat the lie. Don't even repeat the lie. Because less sophisticated people will believe it. Anyway, with the rise of the Fox propaganda channel, the Republican propaganda channel, and the rise of Newt Gingrich, and the rise of throwing out established norms, like impeaching a president over an affair, choosing the president of the United States against the will of the American people. Bush v. Gore is still the essence of dictatorial rule in America beginning. Or refusing to allow a elected president, Barack Obama, to choose a Supreme Court justice. Violation of established norms. A fake press, a fake news organization like Fox, and calling legitimate news fake. This, by the way, is a classic technique of fascists, of totalitarians. Take legitimate things and turn them around. We complain Fox is fake news. We can prove Fox is fake news. I'm not fake news. You're fake news. Show how Trump is connected to Russia. I'm not connected to Russia. Democrats are connected to Russia. You see how it works. It's very simple. Donald Trump, release your tax returns. I released my tax returns. Hillary Clinton didn't. Well, that's not factually true. Yes, it is. And most people won't actually examine what's true or false. They'll just believe what their predilection tells them to believe. It's one of the things, again, that they teach in Finland and European countries. They teach people critical thinking. It's why critical thinking skills are so important. But one of the things Russia has done, Vladimir Putin did in Russia, is spread fake news, tell complete lies about their opponents, get their opponents to be brought on trumped-up charges. Navalny, the opponent to Vladimir Putin, was brought in on embezzlement charges. It was completely false, but they locked him up. Remember that with Hillary Clinton? Lock her up, even though there was no basis to it. Solely to keep Putin in power. Well, what Russia learned is that these same fake news techniques, these same propaganda techniques that successfully allowed Vladimir Putin to end democracy in Russia could be used to end or at least limit democracy in what used to be the greatest democracy on the planet, the United States of America. By using fake news, by using propaganda, by using the same tried and true techniques that Stalin had used, that Hitler had used, that Lenin had used, we could do it in the United States. All you had to do was take existing animosities. In America, our biggest animosity is racism. So you have to encourage racism. And the Putinistas did very good, along with their Republican allies, in encouraging and fomenting racism in America. There are other isms, misogyny, hatred of men's hatred of women, that was emphasized. Hatred of gay people, hatred of immigrants. All these things were emphasized. Republicans didn't used to hate immigrants. Republicans maybe were not so great toward women, not so great toward gay people, but George Bush was not an anti-immigrant president. Neither was John McCain. But by creating this fear of the other, just as the Nazis did, the new Russian fascists knew how to help promote fascism in America. And the perfect person to do it was Donald Trump. Here's a guy that didn't care about policy, had no real ideas of his own, except this sort of general racism and hatred of foreigners that I think is native to Donald Trump. But mostly what Donald Trump cares about is Donald Trump. It's about corruption. It's about narcissism. It's about helping his own self. And Trump, because he wants to help himself and doesn't care about his country, was more than willing to accept the aid from Vladimir Putin. Indeed, he publicly asked Russia to commit espionage against the United States so long as it would help him beat Hillary Clinton. That's why the collusion case against him is, well, pretty easy. I'm sure Robert Mueller will give us more details. But the main thing to understand is the Republican polity, the Republican Party, was set up for this. They were set up to believe conspiracy theories by the guy who didn't create this strange birther theory about President Obama, but spread it more widely even than the mentally ill creators of it, right? I don't know that they're mentally ill. Let's just say evil. I don't want to say mentally ill. But Donald Trump spread it further and faster than anyone. He claimed to believe it. He claimed to send investigators out about it. And no one ever really challenged him. Donald, where are those investigators you promised? If anything, Donald Trump was copying Joe McCarthy, that classic Republican in the 1950s. Joe McCarthy, as a joke, famously said in the 1950s on a tarmac changing planes in West Virginia, "I have here a list of 28 communists." It actually was his laundry list. They've looked closely at it. It was two pairs of pants and three shirts, and it was a laundry list. But he had decided, as a joke, to say that there were communists in the U.S. government because he thought it might get him some attention. Turns out it gave him a lot of attention. And it turned out this whole charade, this whole fake news, gave us McCarthyism for 4 to 6 years of where people were stopped, blackmailed from their jobs, kicked out of Hollywood, this whole McCarthyism. Well, fake news works. And no one's better at it than Roger Ailes or, frankly, Bill Shine, who's taking over now for Donald Trump. I mean, this is their practice. This is what they do. And they do it really well. It's actually very easy to manipulate public opinion. I did a show a couple weeks ago about where evil comes from and how Hannah Arendt studied the great mastermind of the Holocaust, Adolf Eichmann. And she found that Eichmann wasn't as smart as he claimed to be. He actually was pretty simple. He just liked to be part of something. He just liked to join something. And so he did. And you'll find that most Trumpists are not that intelligent. Certainly they don't know much about critical thinking. What they do is they want to be part of something. And it might be because they're racist. It might be because there's a group of them that apparently are unhappy. They're not getting what they want with women. They're not getting any sex, so they're angry at women. Maybe they hate immigrants. Maybe they're taught to hate immigrants. Whatever it is, Trumpists want to be part of this. And that's why I actually think this ostracism against them is working. But to really understand why the Republicans now want to give up on NATO, want to love Putin, really, they've given up on democracy. They've given up on America. They've given up on the Constitution. They just believe in power. Power and joining in with their fellow citizens. And that, in essence, is how the Party of Lincoln became the Party of Putin. I'll take a break and get your calls after this. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Right back after this.
Schooling the GOP, one hand tied behind his back, the Constitution in the other. It's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Who says nerds can't be fun? It's Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. So where are we now? We know that the Russians, after invading Ukraine, contrary to treaty in 2014, we know that they scared a lot of people because they had basically promised not to invade Ukraine, and we had promised Ukraine as well. That caused Europe to spend a lot more on their defense, which is good. It's ironic that Trump complains about that now when they actually are doing that. But we also know that ever since the invasion of Ukraine, in order to convince people that the clearly unjust thing they were doing was just, that's when the Russians started spending a lot of money. They spent they gave a ton of money to NRA, the National Rifle Association, which still refuses to disclose exactly how many tens of millions they got from Putin's government. But they use that to elect Donald Trump. And where we are today is that, well, we know that 40% of Republicans favor pulling out of NATO. 56% of Republicans think Donald Trump's relationship with Vladimir Putin is good for the United States. And it's important to point out that in 2014, some 8% of Democrats had a favorable opinion of Vladimir Putin, and 7% of Republicans did. Boy, what a change. In 2 years, by December 2016, almost 40% of Republicans had a favorable impression of Vladimir Putin. Some 10% of Democrats did, which showed that some of Putin's support helped him with them as well. We have Old Faithful Michael from the Bronx on the line. He's been holding on for a while, and he's pointing out that even today, with GOP going after FBI agents, is continuing in this, well, pro-Putin mold. Go ahead, Michael.
Hey, Mark. Yep, exactly what was going on. And just moments ago, and I can't keep up with the names, but Democrats...
Peter Strzok.
No, I got his name.
Lisa Page.
Strzok. But the Democratic congressman that was just questioning Agent Strzok. Thanks. I'm going to get it.
It's okay. Real quick. Make your point.
He was exposing several GOPs in Congress that sent multiple anti-Trump emails to them, to each other.
Right. I'm afraid we're out of time, Michael. I'm sorry. We'll have more time on Monday. I hope you enjoyed today's show.